as we do have other nights, but our audience is as large as usual, I do believe. Appreciate your presence. When I count my blessings, a lot of them center around memories, even though my memory's poor. I forget and don't. But with the help of others, I can sometimes recall things that do not come to mind without a little help. But James Craig led the other night and led the singing, and I was glad to be reminded of the association with his family when he was a youngster. And then Fred Richter led, and I remember the Richters and how much Brother Carl meant to the work in this county and even in the beginning of this congregation. Tonight, Bill Merle led. Never been associated so much with him, just see him once in a while. But his father went to school to me. About the time I first began coming into this county, Billy Merle was in classes that I tried to teach at Valdosta, Georgia. The church family is a great family. It's good to be in the church. Good to be in the church family. And what a wonderful privilege. I'd be glad if I could remember so many things that I've forgotten from even just this county. And the things I do recall mean a lot to me. Brothers and sisters, fathers and mothers, people in the church treat you as if they had those very family relationships. It's been 35 years, I guess, since I first went someplace to preach every night on the home. And some of you realize that over and over again, I've done that very thing. And generally, since the very first, I've done so by request. On a few occasions, preach Sunday through Sunday with every lesson on the home. That means we'd have 10 lessons. But whether there have been 3 or 4 or 10 lessons or whatever the number in the series on the home, I usually have had one I call the joys and responsibilities of parenthood. I think tonight's theme is important. I'd like to say exactly the right thing on the subject, the responsibilities and joys, the joys and responsibilities of parenthood. The ideal situation as far as home life is concerned is for there to be a father and a mother and children. It takes all to make the family unit complete in the ideal sense. The absence of one, absence of children, or the absence of a father or mother, of course, there's something missing. And there are joys in home life, should be. I'm aware that in many homes there are sorrows, and there is an irresponsible attitude. I'm talking tonight about responsibilities, but some people do not assume their responsibilities. They do not get under the load and carry it. And for there to be the joys, there must be the responsibilities. Joys and responsibilities of parenthood. I believe wholeheartedly in this idea that children that are loved and controlled pay their way as they go. When they get out, or get old enough, get out earning their own way, and they won't owe their parents anything, actually. They have paid their way as they went along by their own contribution to the joys of home. Some of the memories, of course, that are more vivid in my mind, and I feel sure in others my age, would be back when the children were little. My children were little a long time ago. They're not so young anymore. My grandson, older grandson, is the same age almost exactly that I was when I came into this county. So we've made the round of a generation or two there. But I like to remember those days when we had little girls, even little preschool girls. They couldn't earn money, and they were little expenses along and didn't for things they had to have, but I certainly don't feel that they owe me anything for being little people in my at my house. They paid their way as they went. There are joys that people who haven't had little people just do not know, especially if they are people who have loved their little ones and control their little ones, and had happy little people. Little people grow up in a hurry. They soon are teenagers. If those children still know how to show gratitude and to show respect, if there's a pleasant understanding between parents and children, they still pay their way as they go. I insist they do. There are joys that they contribute to the family. I do not think that being a father gives one an excuse to complain about all he had to buy and spend and all this. Of course there are expenses. And trying to get the children an education, try to get them ready for adult responsibilities, medicine to buy, clothes to buy, they've got to be fed at a time when they're not in a position to earn. But I don't believe as parents we have any room to complain, because I think those children make their contribution to the home. It's a sad thing when father and mother have a rebellious son, a rebellious daughter, where they have sorrow in the place where joy should have been. It's a wonderful thing when we can see our daughter, our child, in the crowd and with delight realize that's mine, and we claim them gladly. Have pride in one another. It's unfortunate if a wife has to be ashamed of her husband and his conduct, or the husband has to be ashamed of his wife and her conduct, or if the parents have to be ashamed of the children and the way they behave. Sometimes children are ashamed of their parents. On occasions, they have reason to be. And at other times, it may be that the reflection is on the children. I was in that early teenage period when the superintendent made a talk in chapel. We had a little worship assembly in a public school every day of my high school and college. Every day. But in high school, the superintendent made a talk one day about how if you want to, you can tease a four-year-old about his father and tell him your father's no good, he's no good. And the four-year-old will come to the defense of that father. I don't like that kind of teasing. I don't mind expressing myself on that. I don't like to agitate a little one by arguing with him that his daddy's no good. But a four-year-old does think his daddy could hang the moon. He thinks his daddy's wonderful. That's a normal human reaction. That's one reason the little people pay their way. They have a certain pride in their family if things are halfway normal, if they have a chance at all. Children who are too young to say words can express gratitude for some little new pair of shoes or a little toy or whatever it is. And that gratitude expressed is one thing that pays the bill. You bring in something and, oh, there's delight and it's obvious in the little face. and you're glad you bought it. And it's marked paid in full. Little people are good at that. But the principal or superintendent of the made his talk, and he said on up later there's an age when the son may wonder how his father and mother, as old fogey as his, could have such a bright son. I wonder how many have gone through that period and might recognize themselves. Is there anyone here tonight that has that wonder, that marvel, that his parents, as dumb as they are, could have such bright son or daughter? But then the children get a little older and they begin to come and say, Dad, how would you do this? Or what do you advise on this? And the superintendent pictured a man at 40 going to his dad and saying, Dad, how did you do it? By that time he realizes that the responsibilities haven't been easy. The load has been great, and he marvels at what his dad could do. Maybe we tend to go through those periods. I'd like to encourage our young people to avoid that period when there is the sort of attitude that they are so smart and the parents so ignorant. Maybe the parents have been here long enough, they've learned a lot of lessons that the younger people haven't. And we need to know that through their experience and because of their love, they have something indeed to offer. And that's why I want that relationship to be as fine as possible between parents and children. They need to talk to each other. Each needs the satisfaction. I suppose a lot of the joy is tied up in the talks, in the conversations. I think one of the finest things my father ever did for me was talk. And he did talk to me as if I were an adult. Even as we rode together to town or we walked across the field together. And there are some of those conversations that come back from my childhood that if I told you the conversation, it wouldn't be significant at all. But it must have been significant to me because I still remember certain little circumstances and little things he said, and even which field we were walking across when we lived out on the farm. I remember the direction from the house we were going when we talked of certain things that are trivial. I think you remember too. If you look back to your childhood days and your memory, you remember things that your father said or your mother said. And you said, and the conversation comes back. Not on international affairs, not on something all that major, it wouldn't make headlines if it were recalled. But important because it's important for there to be pleasant, open communication between the parents and the children. Every child needs a father, and every child needs a mother. Every child does. Sometimes there's a wreck and a father and mother are killed. I've known of a few cases where mother and father both would be killed and a child or more than one child would be left from a wreck. A child left like that needs a father and a mother. And so often they're blessed by having a new father and a new mother, which soon becomes the father and the mother. It isn't just blood, it's the association. A lot of children are adopted in our day, and they have father and mother by adoption. That can be so pleasant. And again, the child can pay his way if he has the proper gratitude. And the parents can have joy as well as responsibility in bringing up such a child. Joys and responsibilities. There's no substitute for parents. There's not a good substitute under the sun. The idea of gathering 100 children or 150 children in one big brooder house with somebody maybe called, referred to as father, but he's gone nearly all time raising money and doing this and that. And here they are, 15 or 20, under one mother, down one wing of the hall or dormitory. And down the other wing, there's another good big number about the same age. Little boys here. There are those who say if anything should happen to us as parents, we would want our children put in such an institution so they could be brought up together. In such, the larger orphanages do not bring the children up together in that sense that the parents are thinking about. They have the older boy over here with his age and the younger boy over yonder with his age. And any little sister off somewhere with her age group. And there's a mother with a whole cluster of them, too many. She didn't have a lap large enough for them to sit in her lap. And they starve almost for love and affection. I'm confident that a child does need somebody to provide clothes and food and all that. That's important. Very important, of course, essential. But I think he needs a lap to sit on about as much as he needs a shirt on his back. He needs somebody that cares. He may go off to school and they may have an excellent teacher, maybe 25 or 30 or even more in the class. But he needs to go home where he's special, where somebody in that small family unit can be so glad to see his good report card, can be very pleased to hear him tell of his experiences at school, and be willing to hear even of his little problems at school or little unhappy experiences. Everybody, every little child growing up, or every young person growing up, needs a father and a mother, and needs to be a part of a family unit. God ordained it that way. And that is the ideal. Sometimes a mother is left to be mother and father, both. Or sometimes the father is left to be both mother and father, one parent. And there have been some very happy homes, even though somebody was missing. I don't know what happened to Timothy's father. He's mentioned as being a Greek in Acts 16, but then he just disappears from the record. And when Paul was writing to Timothy, he had occasion to mention his mother and grandmother. When he was thinking of the unfeigned faith that was in Timothy, not pretended faith, but the real item, real faith, unfeigned faith. And he said it dwelt first in your grandmother and in your mother. And in that same book of 2 Timothy, in the third chapter, toward the close of the chapter, when he's mentioning the fact that from a child, Timothy had known the sacred writings, the Holy Scriptures. He'd known those stories of the Bible way back from childhood days. Evidently the same mother and father, the same mother and grandmother, did the job. Now, I don't know whether the father died or whether he just wasn't spiritually minded and the responsibility was left to mother and grandmother, but the clear implication is that they were the ones that taught Timothy. They did the job, and Timothy was one of the finest men this world has seen. According to Philippians 2:19, in that context, it was hard to find a man that would care for the church as unselfishly as Timothy would. He mentioned that to the church at Philippi. He was going to be with them, and Paul is reminding him of the kind of man he is. He'd been taught by somebody who had faith and knowledge, and he came to have faith and knowledge. And evidently it was a pleasure to the mother and grandmother to talk to that hungry little mind. As he learned the stories, they could rejoice in seeing his development. And then surely it must have been a pleasure to them to see what he became as an adult. I'm talking about the rewards of having children, if they turn out to be like Timothy. It wasn't an accident that Timothy was what he became, because he was taught to be that kind of man. Evidently. And mother and grandmother had enjoyed the teaching, no doubt. That can be a pleasant experience to any mother. And then they could delight in the accomplishments of the young man, even if he were way over yonder, and they could just hear once in a while of the kind of life he was living and the kind of service he was rendering. The joys of parenthood. Timothy paid his way. I don't know how much money they spent or how much time they spent. It must have been a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to bring up any little boy. If you talk to a mother who has little people around her feet, you can find out. You won't have to inquire long. You can find out she's rather busy. My wife called Ramona Olson not long ago and said, "How are you and your little family getting along?" And she said, "Just fine, fine." That one is just getting over chicken pox and the other has ear infection. He said, "We're just getting along fine." Well, that goes with it. There are problems, there are difficulties. If you have a few little folks at your house, you know there's a lot of time. I still say they'll pay their way as they go. And when they're grown, they won't owe you a penny. For all those doctor's bills and all that grocery bill and all that clothing bill, all of that, and all that time. You invest a lot. It's a fearful responsibility. It's a difficult task. Sometimes a young couple will marry and there's soon a little one in the family, and the parents can't go to the games as freely as they used to, and they can't just run around and gad about as maybe they could for a time in their as young teenagers, and the little one's in the way, and conspicuously in the way, and maybe resented. We lived at Russellville some years ago, and there's a family over there that we thought so much of, and about the time we were getting acquainted with them and coming to think so much of them, the daughter married and left. Except she didn't. She came back day after day after day after day to bring the little one and dump the little one. Not because she was working, but the little one was in her way. My understanding is that grandmothers generally are glad to have the little ones. But it was an ugly attitude, I thought. As I look back, I still am convinced that the mother of the little one didn't want the little one. The little one was a nuisance, was in the way. Now, that's not a happy situation. I know that child that was a little one then would no longer be a little one. I moved away from that 23 years ago. So a little one, I don't know what's become of that little one, but if there didn't come a time when that mother loved the little one and wanted to be around the little one and delighted in the association more, that little one would grow up to be a rebel. The seeds of rebellion often go back to the time when the parents didn't want the child and the child was in the way and made to feel unwelcome. At any age in life, whether we're little people or adults, our older people, we don't like to be where we are unwelcome. I've always delighted to be in gospel meetings. And my association in such is a very rich treasure. I've enjoyed the hospitality of so many homes, not just for meals, but even to spend every night during a meeting with a family. And eat with them some as well as spending the night. But I've shared and enjoyed hospitality. In all these years and decades, there have been a few. I could count them on my fingers and not include the thumb. There have been a few times when we've gone to spend the night during a meeting with a family where it was obvious we were not welcome. Can you imagine what it feels like to take your wife into a place for a week and you're not welcome and you know you're not? Maybe you think that I just misjudged and really I was welcome when I... We drove into one yard one time along in the afternoon, late, comparatively late, it wasn't dark. And the man came and the first question after just barely speaking, He said, how did you know where we lived? And I said, well, I got a letter from the elder and told me we were to come to this address. We went in. It happened my wife was in great pain at the moment, and we feared the hospital. We made it without that. But it was conspicuous, a chilly atmosphere inside. The church built the house, and when they built it, you go through the kitchen into a utility room. And then between the freezer and the washing machines on back, there was a room just before you entered into the garage. There was a bedroom on one side and a nice bath on the other, and the bedroom was furnished by the church when it built the house. And the elders understood, now this is where the preacher will stay. Well, this new preacher and his wife had come, and they had little girls, and they didn't want the preacher. And somehow the elders had not talked it over with them. They just wrote me and said, you're to spend the nights with the preacher and his wife at this address. And we got there, and I suppose we'll remember it as long as we remember anything. We spent a week in a home where we were not welcome. It was obvious. They resented. Maybe the elders were unwise indeed in not talking it over. But somehow there was that furniture that the family didn't own, and it was away down there beyond the utility room from the living area of the home. It was obviously put there. Do you want to go with me sometime if I ever have that experience again? Would you like to stay in that home too? I could name a few. But a little boy, too young to put it in words, can tell when he's not welcome. Little people are not all that dumb. If they are in the way, if they're not loved, if they are pushed aside and run out of the place, they realize they're not there. Well, they wouldn't be able to say, I'm just not welcome at my own home. They wouldn't say that. But it begins to work on their very personality and attitude early in life. And for there to be the happy association in the family, there must be that love and that attention, that very goodwill that is so easy to see and so unpleasant if it isn't there. I believe every child has a right to a father and a mother. And there are as many, in fact, more homes that want children than there are children that need homes. Several years ago, I don't know what it has been lately because I haven't seen the articles, but I used to take a Birmingham paper that every January would tell about the State Department of Pensions and Security and how many children they had had that they could adopt out. And they'd found adoptive homes for so many. They'd always report how many. And they would also tell how many there had been that applied for children. And usually the number would be about 12 times as many homes applied for children as they had children to place. So the shortage is not in homes. There are homes wanting children, just as there are children that need homes. And nothing should happen to cut those children off from people that want children. They have a right to children if they're children available that need homes. I think a lot of you know my Kevin, my grandson Kevin Moore. He had a lot of hospital experience as a little boy. And one day my wife was sitting with him in the hospital and he came across with one of his best points. He said, Mommy Lee, I appreciate your sitting with me. And she then took up the conversation and carried it on. She said, well, Kevin, it's my duty to. In a family, we take care of one another. You, when you're sick, then one or the other of us will be here and take care of you. Then sometime when you're big and one of us is sick, then you'd be right there to care. And a family takes care of its own. That's what the Bible teaches. 1 Timothy chapter 5 suggests if there's a widow in need, let the children and grandchildren, one translation, King James would say nephews, children or nephews, let them take care of her. In that same chapter 5 of 1 Timothy, in verse 16, the suggestion is, if any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them. That the church be not burdened, that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. It's the home unit that takes care of one another. The little helpless child can't even feed himself, can't dress himself. But somebody cares for him. Then he gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and after a while he can take care of himself pretty well. Finally, he reaches a time when he's an adult and the parents may be old and may be sick or one thing or another. And yet that generation then takes care of the very ones that used to take care of the little one when he was helpless. Whoever is helpless, whether it's the little one or the older one, we take care of whoever in the family that needs it, gets the care. That's the way the Lord intended it and the way he expressed himself quite clearly. Ruth told her mother-in-law, I'm going with you. Where you dwell, that's where I'm going to dwell. And where you die, that's where I'll die, and that's where I'll be buried. And she said, where I lodge, you'll lodge. Where thou lodgest, I'll lodge. We'll be together. And when she married Boaz, evidently Boaz cooperated with that idea wonderfully. Naomi had a home when Ruth had a home. And Ruth had a little baby boy born, and Naomi took him in her arms and became a nurse to that little one, helping care for him, or caring for him, it seems to me. And neighbors came in and congratulated Naomi at what she had. She had a little one now. It's not hers, it's her daughter-in-law's child. Her son was dead, and this daughter-in-law is married again. But the neighbors thought, Ruth is better to you than 7 sons. And they congratulated the grandmother, who wasn't even a grandmother to that child, for having a little one to care for, to love. The home is that's your first security. You take care of one another. It's good insurance to have some daughters, to have some sons, to have somebody. When you get my age, you're right glad to have some people that care that are still in an active age. I don't know what my wife and I could have by way of insurance that would be comparable to having Judy and Sandra and our in-laws and our grandchildren. Looks to me like that's about the finest insurance we could have, is to have a family. I've mentioned here this week that 84-year-old man whose wife is dead and his children are both dead, and he's a man who has left with some sisters, and they're good to him. And the one with whom he lives now is 80 years old, and she cares for him. Indeed, I don't know how she could do a better job than she is doing. But it's good if there's some family for everybody when he reaches an age in which he's in need of special help. The family unit. The joys and the responsibilities. It is difficult to care for a little baby. And to hear its cries in the middle of the night may not be very pleasant music. And to see it when its temperature is high and whatever disease is making its attack, that's not a pleasant thing. A lot of the tasks that come with caring for one another are not pleasant. And it isn't easy at the other end of the journey, the other end of the trail, to care for a sick, elderly person. The Little people do, in their own way, appreciate the care. If they're too little to have words, one way or another, you know they care. And it's Kevin didn't do anything so marvelous when he said to his grandmother, "I appreciate you sitting with me." Well, of course he would. There's something wrong if he wouldn't. I'm glad he expressed it. I've asked you to do that. I've hoped maybe my little efforts this week would cause somebody to be more free and more generous with his thank yous and with his expressions of appreciation. I wish we could encourage more young men to put their arms around mother and around daddy at one time or another and express in words their gratitude and their delight. I got word when I lived in Athens back in the 40s that my dad had fallen dead on the job. He didn't even get to the hospital. He's dead. The doctor said in a case like his, you could almost say he died and then fell. I have recalled so many things he did for me in the years since that 1947 day in January. And the thing that haunts me is I didn't say thank you enough. I didn't express enough gratitude. I could tell you numbers of things that Dad did for me at great sacrifice. I did say thank you. I remember on certain occasions my expressing my appreciation for what he did. I had a 1938 coupe. But this is 1935. It wasn't a new car anymore. And Dad told me in one of my trips home that he wanted to get me a new car, trade in that old one, and he'd take care of the payments. Now, I told him thank you. I expressed my gratitude. But as I look back, I didn't show enough gratitude. And it's not a pleasant memory. It's not a pleasant thought. And you can't express gratitude now. It's too late. He wanted me to have an education, which he didn't have. He went to school at the University of Hard Knocks and learned so many things that I've never learned. And he could do things with his hands that I can't do at all. And I'm amazed when I think back of what Dad could do that I can't. But he wanted me to have what he called an education. And he sacrificed that I might stay in school at a time when his salary was small. I ought to care. I did care. I knew to some extent what my debt was to him. But I don't believe any son can overdo the job of expressing appreciation. You talk about the joys, there's where the joy comes in. The responsibility is there. According to 2 Corinthians 12, it's natural for the father to lay up for the children. You don't expect normally for the children to lay up for the parents, unless it be that time when the parents are aged and unable. And Dad, I think, considered he was doing his job and doing his duty. I was his only child. And he shared whatever he had that he thought I needed. I don't think there was anything selfish about him in his dealings with me. Well, what should he do? Well, let him do what he considers his responsibility, his obligation. But what then should I do? It's as obvious that my responsibility is great. It'd be difficult for me to prove that Dad was obligated to do all that he did for me. When he gave me that little car in 1935, trading in the old one onto that car, and take the list price was $545 for that new Chevrolet. But that was a day when $545 were big. Difficult to get. think fathers generally and mothers generally do much for the children. And if a daughter can't see that and say thank you for the many things mother does, she's a disgrace to the family. I told you about being in homes where we weren't welcome. We've had that experience very few times in a whole lifetime. But one time we lived in the same house with a family that lived in the larger portion of the house. And there was one little girl in junior high in that family. And the mother would work hard to fix neat little dresses for her. And she didn't like any of her dresses, as far as I know. Now, there may have been some dress that she liked, but generally she complained about her dresses. That's been 45 years ago. I still remember. My wife still remembers. We still sometimes mention that little girl. Wonder whatever became of her. But that little girl didn't appreciate her mother's sewing for her. And the mother tried hard to make something neat. There are young ladies that will not even make their own bed after they're big enough to be considered grown in size. Mother does the cooking. Mother does, if there's going to be company, mother takes the added responsibility of preparing the meal. And the daughter is fancy free to watch television, to go to the game, to run around with the crowd, one thing or another. Until one learns to take his part or her part in the home and measure up to the responsibilities, there's something lacking. If a father won't meet his obligation, there's something lacking. If a son or daughter has no sense of gratitude and doesn't take some part of the load, something is wrong. Seriously wrong. I appreciate your attention and the way you've listened. And I haven't been told just who it is that ought to be baptized, but in almost every audience, even a Wednesday night audience, when you have a group of courteous, attentive people listening, there's somebody there that should have been baptized a few years ago, but hadn't been. Heard many, many, many sermons and taught in home and taught in classes, and taught, and yet doesn't obey. I don't know whether there's somebody like that here or not. I'll tell you, it isn't a smart thing to just refuse to obey God. To him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. And our failure to obey doesn't bring joy. It's the obedience that brings the joy. The proper attitude toward our Heavenly Father. Think how much we owe him. And we can say thank you. And we can try to obey and show love. Christ said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. There's something lacking in a young man or a mature man or a woman who knows the truth and doesn't obey it. It's a sad lack, serious lack. I wish I knew exactly what to say. I'm assuming that somebody's here like that. I wish I knew what to say to persuade you to come now, while we stand together and sing.